An insider's look at the National Football League.
That's a W. How many of you want to eat a W tonight?
Time for NFL Lunch.
Cook you a turducken. There it is.
He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Sponsored by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse with Vinny and Haney on Sports Radio. 105.7 The Fan.
Todd Peterson, football, NFL Lunch style here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw. You're on 105.7 The Fan. Vinny's out at One Winning Drive with the Ravens back at training camp today. Then tomorrow, and then next week, they have the joint practice with the Indianapolis Colts, and then the preseason opener is a week from tomorrow. But Lamar Jackson, Ravens quarterback, probably should have three most valuable players on his mantle. With all due respect to Josh Allen, who had a hell of a year, but, you know, I don't vote. I just figured when you get first-team All-Pro, probably indicator, but it's not how it works, as Howard Balzer told us a few months back. But Lamar was on NFL Network talking about the team, and one of the questions was, to number eight, how defense is schemed for him and Derrick Henry.
You know, guys, I believe he'd be like eight in the box sometimes, you know. Defense try to stop him before he gets started because I just me seeing it with myself and believing in Derrick, once he gets to the linebacker level, it's probably a house call. It's probably a house call.
Yeah, Buffalo can attest to that. Once he gets by that level, he's gone. Still runs. I mean, he's a big, strong, fast guy who has done damage for many, many years. And we know what Lamar's skill set is. But Nolan, you got Lamar Jackson, and I'm just looking at last year, accounted for 5,000 yards of offense. Derrick Henry rushing and receiving 2,000. You're almost 2,100 yards of offense. So how do you pick your poison? Because I guess deep down in his DNA, Harbs would like to maybe pound you into submission and eat clock and maintain the big lead, but Lamar Jackson could strike from anywhere on the field. And we saw this offense when they were cooking. They were averaging 30 points a game plus and blowing teams out in a big way.
Well, I guess the answer is you don't. You know, I mean, you pick one thing that you want to focus on, but you can't stop this Ravens offense entirely. And that's what's made them such a joy to watch and develop from the early stages of Lamar's career, where as an individual talent, he was fantastic. And you have good pieces around him, and they were a good offense. But if you could stop the run, say in 18 or 19, stack the box, like say the Titans did in the playoff game, then they could be had. But as Lamar developed in his career and became a more efficient and even better passer, well, now there's no way to stop him. You know, once the play action gets rolling, it's really, the defense is just guessing at that point, it seems. But if they were able to get some footing and muscle up and stop the run, both Henry and Lamar, well, we've seen Lamar just stand back there and pick you apart through the air.
Yep.
You know, so there really isn't a glaring weakness anymore. I mean, sure, like the deep ball, could it be better? Yeah, and that seems to be something they're working on in training camp. But there's nothing that's so glaring like, oh, man, this is a big weakness, every opposing defense, that's at the top of their list. If they do that, the Ravens are going down. I don't see it. Didn't see it for the past 2 years.
Team first mentality. Lamar Jackson, he's a star by any definition in the National Football League. But here's Lamar talking about all about the team.
I don't, you know, I'm just trying to win the game at the end of the day and trying to put my team in a great situation. Mm-hmm. And each and every time I'm on the field, I'm trying to score. So if we don't score, I'm pretty much ticked off. I don't care what I done did, you know, in that drive before. If we didn't score, it really don't matter.
So he's saying, but, you know, we all watch during the games and, you know, the red zone frustrations, for instance, could boil over. And a famous line from Lamar, we love Justin Tucker. I'd rather see him kicking extra points, not field goals. Tucker obviously no longer part of the equation, but when you set the bar high for yourself and for the offense, if you feel as though there's opportunities lost, you know, you self-reflect, and it sounds like he takes a lot of that personally when drives stall, even though it might not be entirely his fault.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just his personality, because that's the way he talked since he arrived here. You know, that's always been his MO. But at the same time, we've also seen the Ravens lose some games in recent years where the offense was on point, but the defense just couldn't stop a nosebleed, especially late in the game. And all of a sudden, what felt like a comfortable cruise control victory where you're up by multiple possessions, all of a sudden it's a one-score game and we're losing, or we're going to overtime and we're losing there. So I think Lamar has that in the back of his head as well, that even if their Ravens are up by 14, 17, you can't feel comfortable. I mean, this is the National Football League. Offenses can score in three plays or less. The top offenses, especially Chiefs, Bills, I mean, they score in a hurry. So no lead is safe, and I think it's a good mentality to have.
I know it's NFL lunch, but Dean Kramer just gave up a two-run homer to Miles Straw. Top of the second, we're at Park Camden Yards, 3-2. Remember last Friday, Orioles were up 4-0 against Colorado, but Dean Kramer on the mound, that was raining. They wound up losing that game. Dean, three runs is good. That's a good thing. Doing you a solid. Take advantage of it. I don't know, Nolan. This looks like it might be a slugfest.
He's not comfortable unless it's close.
Okay, well, I'm uncomfortable when it's close. But it's not about me. Here's Lamar Jackson. Training camp number 8. Yeah, let that sink in for a minute. But here's Lamar talking about level of excitement at camp now compared to where he was a rookie.
I feel like it's even more excitement, you know, knowing what type of team we have coming back, knowing, you know, we got a chip on our shoulder. I'm just ready to get out there, man. And each and every day I've been hyped. Like, I've been too excited. I've been hyped more than the kids, seeing us, to be honest.
Now, when he was a rookie, he wasn't a starting quarterback. Joe Flacco was. So he was coming in, and, you know, John Harbaugh and Marty Morningweg at the time had to figure out a way to get him incorporated into the offense. And, you know, remember the days where he was lining up at wide receiver as somewhat of a decoy, and then Flacco got hurt, Lamar took over, and the Ravens have had one of the best regular season records of football ever since. But I guess to his point, the excitement level is, look, in 2018, we didn't know what the hell this team was going to be, and they wound up making the playoffs, losing in the wild card round. I mean, this team's one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl, and I'd be pumped too.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to his personality. It seems authentic. There's nothing really fake about his persona when he's talking about that stuff, the desire to win, the excitement level and everything. But, you know, we talk about the voluntary portion of the offseason, and sometimes people, maybe not anymore, but in the past they did, would get on Lamar's case. Why aren't you there? You're the leader of the team.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Just hearing him talk and seeing the way he does go about practice, to me, that shows you, case in point, why it isn't a concern. Because when training camp rolls around, he's not begrudgingly coming back to the castle saying, oh, it's that time of year again. We've, you know, go through the motions. Just get me to the regular season. I mean, if he wanted to play in the preseason, if you asked him, I'm sure he'd say, hell yeah. You know, he just wants to play football. So, I don't know. That's the kind of stuff that I don't really get. You start talking about the voluntary portion of the offseason, and training camp at this point almost seems, the way they treat it,
right,
unpadded 80% of the time, you know, practically just glorified walkthroughs. I mean, the teams themselves don't even take it as serious as some of the players do, in my opinion.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com, talk about the National Football League with him. Get his thoughts on these teams that have big expectations for 2025. Look at the quarterback class of 23 and how they're progressing here, third year now into the National Football League. And keep you up to date on the Orioles and Blue Jays. Bottom of the second, Birds up 3-2. Ryan O'Hearn with a two-run jack, but Miles Straw matched the two-run homer. Adley has a sack fly. So Dean Kramer, come on, man. We're giving you the lead again. Hold it up. But joining us now, talks about NFL from CBSSports.com. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. He's our friend, Ryan Wilson. Ryan, what's happening?
Good afternoon, Bob and Nolan. How you guys doing?
Doing all right, man. Let's look at the quarterback class of 2023. I guess we'll cross on Will Levis off the board since it looks like he's going to miss the entirety of the season. And I know we've talked about Carolina, and you kind of look at him maybe as a sleeper in the NFC. But Bryce Young, entering his third year in the league, already had turnover at the coaching staff. They brought in some new personnel, hopefully, to help him out. What about Bryce Young going into year three? Is the pressure less on him now than it was as a rookie, or is he's in his third year and showing a glimpse of what he was at Alabama? And now you need to ramp it up a little bit there.
Yeah, I feel like the pressure's less now than it was the last 6 weeks of the season when he came in for an injured Andy Dalton and absolutely, you know, balled out. They should have beaten the Chiefs if not for Xavier Legette dropping that ball towards the end of that game. So I think you feel really good about the fact that Dave Canales seems to be buying into what Bryce was able to do at the end of the season. You also get to Xavier Legette year two. Hunter Renfrow absolutely balling now, which is sort of a funny storyline. He missed last year with a pretty serious health issue, but he's back doing his thing, and he's been really fun at camp. They drafted Tet McMillan. They have JT Sanders, the tight end they drafted in the fourth round last year. And the offensive line should be better. The biggest issue is going to be defense. Bryce has nothing to do with that. But I think he has a chance to come out and deal a little bit in much the same way that we saw when he was at Alabama, and that necessitated him being the number one overall pick.
Now, C.J. Stroud's been in the playoffs 2 years that he's been in the league, and you know they're the prohibited favorites, I would think, Ryan, to win the AFC South. But what about Stroud taking his game to yet another level here with the Houston Texans, who, okay, we've been in the playoffs, that's great, but now they're probably looking year three. All right, we got to get another step farther in this January football thing here.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a bounce back from CJ, and CJ didn't necessarily play terribly last year. The big issue was the offensive line struggled. Tank Dell was banged up. Nico Collins was banged up for a stretch. So they went out and drafted a bunch of wide receivers to help there. They got a new offensive coordinator that moved on from Bobby Sloak, and just goes to show you how quickly things can turn. Bobby Sloak was the hottest name in town after CJ's rookie season, and then they sort of were on different pages last season. All that said, that team still won 10 games in both years CJ's been there and went to the playoffs, like you mentioned. But I think this year we're going to see CJ take a next step and look closer and probably surpass year one CJ than the guy we saw struggle at times last year for many reasons that were out of his control.
Now, I guess the guy of the first round picks in 23 that's under the most pressure, Anthony Richardson, you know, reading reports on CBSSports.com and, you know, watching all the networks, he's looked sharp, fine, whatever that means here in the last week of July. But it's had the shoulder problem, but doesn't appear to be an issue right now. But what about Richardson? Are the Colts in a situation with him? And they'll be in town next week, joint practice with the Ravens, where if he stinks, they've got to start looking at their next quarterback here.
Yeah, they're saying they're not doing those things, but that's what you have to say in July 30th.
Right.
Also, it's all relative. When you line up next to Daniel Jones, you can look pretty good. Although there were some rough patches early on, and maybe that's a nod to the defense playing pretty well in training camp for the Colts, which would be a great development as well. But this feels like make or break for Anthony Richardson. If Will Levis basically got 12 months, I think Anthony Richardson has a lot to prove and not very much time to do it. And look, you can make the case that he only started 13 games at Florida, and maybe he shouldn't have been drafted so high, or maybe there should be more kid gloves approach to bring him along. But he was out there as a rookie, had the freak injury, missed a lot of time there. Last year, he did not play well when he was out there, got benched for Joe Flacco. And it's you know, time to get going here. This isn't the 1987 where a first-round pick could sit on the bench for a year and a half, 2 years, and then come out guns a-blazing. So I'm absolutely of the opinion that if they struggle this year and they have a top-five pick, and this quarterback class looks to be pretty deep, whether Arch is in it or not, you think you'd have to kick the tires on moving on, because it's becoming more and more clear, should this year not work out, that AR5 is not going to be the long-term solution.
Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com, joining us here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw, Orioles Blue Jays, 3-2 Birds, our Birds, top of the third, Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Now, last year's class, and we've talked, Jaden Daniels, we know the brilliance that he took, take them, the Commanders, to the championship game. Caleb Williams got a new OC, hopefully better protection on the O-line. But what about Drake May, third pick out of Carolina? You got Mike Vrabel coming in, more of a defensive guy. Stephon Diggs looks to be healthy after the knee injury last year in Houston. If you're going to put an expectation, Ryan, on Drake May, what would it be his second year with the Patriots?
It's funny, Bob, because I just talked about this earlier today on a podcast with some colleagues. I think Drake May could be a Pro Bowler this year. I'm all in on Mike Vrabel turning things around. They finally drafted some tackles, which they hadn't done in previous drafts, and Will Campbell. They got some help in the running game with Trey Henderson. You talked about Steph Diggs. They drafted a wide receiver, Kyle Williams, in the third round because they need to get better at the wide receiver position in addition to the free agent signings. That defense is going to be lights out, at least on paper, and I imagine that translates. And the good things that Drake May did on a truly dreadful team last year are going to carry over. And the biggest step for most players is year one to year two. And all the good things he did in year one under some trying circumstances, year two feels like it should be easier. You got Josh McDaniels, and Josh McDaniels is really good at one thing, and that's being the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. So he's back home where he needs to be. And I think Drake is going to continue to build on what we saw a year ago And again, I don't think he's going to be necessarily Jaden Daniels, but I think this, I keep saying it and I sound crazy when I say it out loud, but they have a chance to win more games than they lose. And it might just be 9 instead of 7, but I think this team is going to be closer to playoff football than they are to the number, a top 5 pick for what would be a third year in a row.
Good enough to be better than Miami and the Jets?
Yeah.
Because we're obviously, Buffalo's the favorites, and rightfully so, but second place good, maybe, in the East?
Yeah, and I am very low on the Dolphins. I don't know exactly. They've had some injury issues, and it just doesn't feel like that team is on the same page. You got your star quarterback rightfully calling out your star wide receiver, and, you know, the implication or maybe the obvious finger pointing that this team doesn't show up in December when things get cold. I think that's true. So, yeah, I like New England better than Miami, and I think the Jets will be interesting. But 9-7 feels, or 9-8 feels realistic for New England for me.
All right, Ryan, last thing for you, staying with last year's class, J.J. McCarthy, Minnesota Vikings had a surprisingly really good regular season, didn't really happen for him at the end, and in the postseason, now Darnold's off to Seattle. What about McCarthy? What are the reports? How's he looking so far in camp for the Vikings as they look to prove that last year, I guess, wasn't a fluke?
Yeah, I mean, he looked pretty good given the opportunities. His arm, his good arm, which we knew coming out, and he's a good athlete, which we knew coming out. He actually flashed a little bit in, I think, the one preseason game he played before the knee injury. I think it's got, a lot of that's just going to be above the next up for J.J. And we saw that, and he's talked about it when he was in Michigan, you know, the pregame meditation stuff. And one of the knocks on J.J. at Michigan was that there were so many great players on that team. He wasn't asked to do a whole bunch, but you looked at his third down play in terms of throwing the ball, and he was one of the best passers in college football that year on third down. And I think Kevin O'Connell, we know how good he is at developing quarterbacks, young and old. And I think he will do his best to put JJ in positions to succeed. And sometimes these injuries, especially for quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because he wasn't forced out there. Sam Darnold actually played out of his mind. And that's encouraging when you're thinking about JJ going into year two, who has a better understanding of the offense. He's going to have Jordan Addison when he gets back from suspension. Of course, he's going to have JJ Justin Jefferson there. They drafted Ty Felton out of Maryland. And that defense is going to be insane. So all those things taken together points to more positive than negative. The issue is that they play in an incredibly tough division. But, I mean, they won, 15 games last year. So they're not far off.
Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com. Ryan, always appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your Woman Crush Wednesday, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you, Bob.
You got it, buddy. Here's Ryan Wilson, everybody. Ravens at pads out at one winning drive. No Jalen Armour Davis again, unfortunately. Orioles, Blue Jays heading to the bottom of the third. Birds are up 3-2. Vlad Jr. doubled off Dean Kramer. No surprise, because career-wise, Vlad Jr. is worn out. Dean Kramer, but he got himself out of the jam. Looks like that ball's flying around Camden Yards. Orioles need to put up a couple more, obviously, against Jose Berríos. No easy task. We'll come back. AL East report. Look at last night's games. Look at today's schedule. Give you the standings. And then a trip through the funhouse with Nolan McGraw before Inside Access takes over, too.
Yankees, Boston, Toronto.
A closer look at the AL East with Vinny and Haney. 105.7 The Fan.
Time for the American League East report here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Orioles and Blue Jays right now, end of three. Orioles lead 3-2. Ryan O'Hearn, two-run homer for the Birds. Adley Rutschman, sack fly, gave them an early 3-0 lead. Miles Straw hit a two-run jack off Dean Kramer. So through three, Orioles lead the Toronto Blue Jays, going for the four-game sweep, 3-2. Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Birds are off tomorrow. Then they take on the Cubs. In Chicago, trade deadline is tomorrow at 6 o'clock, Major League Baseball. Good news out of AA Chesapeake, Tyler Wells coming back from an elbow procedure. Retired all six batters he faced today with one strikeout. So Tyler Wells, Kyle Bradish pitched, so did Povich yesterday. So three arms probably going to be back in the nest at some point here in the month of August. As we said, the Orioles, winners of five in a row, win the finale yesterday, 3-2. So they've taken three in a row from Toronto, bashing away game one, 16-4, where they became the first team in Major League Baseball history to have five sac flies and four homers in the same ballgame. Elsewhere in the American League East last night, Yankees taking on the Tampa Bay Rays. And a guy that's taking a lot of heat for his glove, let his bat do the talk.
Driven out to right field and deep. Low back, turning, looking, see ya! A big three-run home run from Bellinger, and the Yankees have tied the game.
Bellinger, three-run jack, former MVP in the National League. Anthony Volpe also went deep for New York. That was yesterday on the call. 7-5 was the final score. Max Fried picks up the win, his 12th of the season. Aranda goes deep for Tampa. The Rays, 1-for-10. Runners in scoring position in that one. Also last night, Red Sox taking on the Minnesota Twins. And the Red Sox, are they selling Duran? Or are they buying? What are they doing? Well, last night, they took out whatever frustrations they had on Minnesota.
Swinging a high fly ball, left center field deep. Bader going back all the way to the warning track, leaping up. He can't get this one. And Trevor Story goes downtown. Man, did he need that.
Downtown. That's nestled on the call. Trevor Story, three-run homer. Duran went deep himself. Lucas Giolito, how about a bounce-back year for this guy? Six innings pitched, seventh win of the season. He's 7-2 on the year. 8-5 final score. Brooks Lee hit two homers and drove in five in a losing effort there for the Minnesota Twins. Today in Major League Baseball, we got some action happening as we speak. Speaking of Minnesota and Boston, they're tied at 1-2. Got Diamondbacks at the Tigers. That's top of the third in Detroit. Scoreless. Coming up at 2:10, Braves are at Kansas City. If you missed this news last night, Ronald Acuna Jr. had to leave the game. Achilles tightness for Atlanta. Placed on the IL. Coming back from a knee injury. He's had two knee injuries. And this guy's one of the best players in Major League Baseball. It's been a lost season, a debacle for the Atlanta Braves. But Ronald Acuna Jr. is going back on the IL. It looks like Marcelo Ozuna could be had via trade as well. And we talk about the Orioles injuries. And they've had plenty, 25 over the course of the season placed on the IL. The starting rotation that the Atlanta Braves had coming out of spring training, all five, which includes Chris Sale on the 60-day IL. Incredible. They did get Spencer Strider back, who started the year on the IL as he was coming back from Tommy John surgery. So as we want to look at injuries and reasons, excuses, Atlanta's got them. And now the talk is that Brian Snicker might retire after the season. So Atlanta, Nolan, if you recall when we did our preseason baseball predictions, I picked the Orioles and Braves in the World Series.
Any others that you
believe?
Didn't you say Twins?
That's Twins in the Central.
That's all I remember.
I think I might have picked the Cardinals to win. I don't know. Yeah, I'll vote for whatever.
Well, Bean, if you picked all of the teams that end up actually finishing last, that would be just as impressive as picking all the winners correct.
Right. Well, I wouldn't have picked the Orioles to finish last.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, if you pick the Orioles to win, but they finish last, you pick the Braves to win, they finish. Well, that's not going to happen.
Well, we had Jeff Blair on yesterday who took a victory lap, said he picked the Orioles to finish last before the season. You know, if he was said that to us in March, I would have laughed at him.
I think we didn't have him in March. I think we had him towards the beginning of the season, and he told us that. And it got a reaction.
I think I might have laughed. Yeah. Now, who's laughing now? Well, right now it's the Orioles because they're about to sweep the Blue Jays here. 3-2 down Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Cubbies at the Brewers, 2-10. Brewers won the first two of this series. Nats at the Astros, 2-10. Pirates at the Giants, 3-45. San Francisco's been bad. Mets at the Padres. San Diego's won the first two games there. Gregory Soto took the L in the first one. Manny Machado hit a three-run jack last night. Rockies and Guardians. How about Steven Kwan's available now? Gold Glove All-Star outfielder because the Guardians are in sell mode because Emmanuel Clase A was placed on the suspended list with pay for now by Major League Baseball. Rays at Yankees, 7-5, Dodgers at Reds, Marlins at Cards, Rangers, Angels, Mariners, A's. All of that stuff is coming up later on tonight. Standings real quick, Major League Baseball on this woman crush Wednesday. Toronto still 4 up on New York in the East, Boston 5 back. Tampa's 8.5. Detroit's 9 up. As they've stabilized things a little bit. The Tigers winners of 3 in a row. 9 up on the Guardians, 9.5 on KC. Got the Astros 4 up on Seattle, 5 up on Texas. Rangers were playing good ball till the last couple of games. Mets a half game up on the Phillies in the East. Milwaukee now 2 up on the Cubs as they're going head-to-head in the Central. And the Dodgers are 4 games up on the Padres, who have won 4 straight games. Your wild card standings, if the playoffs started today, Yankees, Red Sox, Mariners are in. Texas 1 game back, Tampa's 3. Cleveland's 3.5, and they're selling, Nolan. They're selling at 3.5 in the National League. Cubs, Phillies, Padres would be your wild card teams. That's your standings update here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. When we come back, score update live from Camden Yards, Orioles and Blue Jays. Give you a status report of what's happening on One Winning Drive with the Ravens at a training camp, and then a fun house trip with Nolan before Inside Access takes over at 2 here on 105.7 The Fan. Ryan Mountcastle, eligible to come off the IL on Sunday. And as Tony Manzalino told the media yesterday at Oriole Park Camden Yards, he's expected to be in Philadelphia when that series starts. Trade deadline is tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Neither Ramon in the lineup today. But Laureano, he's been linked to San Diego, Cincinnati, maybe the Mets to some level. Tony Manzalino said, Nolan, before the game, no Laureano because he's needs a rest day and playing a lot of baseball here.
Well, whether you're buying it or not, it doesn't matter because he's gone. He's gone by the end of tomorrow. So whether him being out of the lineup is the reason for that or not, it doesn't matter. He's getting traded.
How surprised would you be if Laureano, I'm just going to name a name, Laureano, O'Hearn, Cedric, Eflin, Morton, any of those? I think Morton's as good as gone. Daniel Allen talked a couple of days ago. It may have been yesterday. You don't think it's foregone conclusion that Eflin's out of here, but I'm thinking most of them are probably packed to new destinations.
Right. I think if you're asking me one that I'd be the most surprised to see stay, probably either Morton or O'Hearn. I mean, the team's all-star. That's the guy that we've been talking about for months is right. the biggest trade piece. And I know he's kind of cooled off from where he was earlier in the year, but still fits the mold of what teams that are buying at the deadline are looking for in a bat. You know, good enough on defense, comfortable with coming off the bench. Seen in the past, his calling card when he came to the Orioles was being able to deliver a clutch at bat without playing the entire game. Put him in there for a pinch hitting situation in the eighth or ninth. You need a hit, he'll give you a home run. So I think that he kind of fits that mold. Laureano's the same way, a little more for his defense and his arm than anything. But if I was going to be surprised by anything at 6 p.m. tomorrow, Morton and O'Hearn.
Now, I don't want to sound ungrateful to what Ryan O'Hearn has done for the Orioles. I mean, he helped them win a lot of games to get to the playoffs twice, as you just pointed out. But Basayo's going to be up here. Mountcastle's coming back next week. We all like what we've seen lately from Kobe Mayo. O'Hearn stays. Maybe we don't see Basayo. Maybe Mayo's at-bats dwindle because Mountcastle's going to be here trying to reestablish maybe some trade value in the offseason. I think O'Hearn goes because maybe Elias is intrigued by what the possibilities, because Basayo and Mayo are going to be next year at first base, depending on how the offseason goes. And Mountcastle, as we talked about earlier with Jim Hunter, Nolan, he goes bananas like he's prone to do. It's been a while, but he can get hot and rake for, you know, weeks at a time. He does that. At the very least, he reestablishes, like, hey, right-handed thumper, gold glove finalist at first base. Right now, his trade value is probably nil. A good 2 months from Ryan Mountcastle could net you something. Of interest.
Yeah, maybe. No, I didn't really even think about it like that because we just all assumed that O'Hearn was getting traded, that there would be no scenario where he's still on the team on Friday. But you're right. Yeah, that was a side of it that I didn't really think about, that, you know, that creates even more of a logjam. And Mountcastle, look, he deserves the chance to prove himself again. You know, he went through some of the dark days. You know, he had his bright moments in the past. He helped this team win a lot of games. You know, he deserves at least one more shot to prove that he deserves a chance to stay. I just think he'll probably ultimately end up suffering the same fate as someone like Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins, Anthony Santander. You know, that old regime of players really has seemed to be getting phased out by Mike Elias.
That's always been the assumption that Elias wants Elias guys on this roster, not Duquette guys. And real quick, out of one winning drive, Vinny checking in, no Jalen Armour Davis, no Zay Flowers today, and we'll get a status report later from John Harbaugh when he meets with the media. Nolan, we have time for a funhouse real quick.
Quick Draws Funhouse.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
105.7 The Fan.
While we're talking about Kobe Mayo, this texter says they're not worried about Mayo's playtime down the stretch because he's actually earning it. Everyone was calling for him to get more at-bats earlier in the year, but he wasn't actually doing anything to justify it, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, at third base, he looked like, holy mackerel, what the hell is this guy doing over there? And he looked overmatched at the plate, now seems more competent, just had his first three-hit game a couple of games ago, and he seems to be adept enough at first base with the assumption he's only going to get better. Not in the lineup today. I mean, it's, you know, Barrios, a tough right-hander, and you have the bats doing what they got to do. O'Hearn's at first, and he's got a two-run jack. But, yeah, I'm excited now about what Kobe Mayo can bring to the equation. We've been hearing for years about the power. We've started to see flashes of it here lately.
This one from John in Millersville says, I'm looking for O'Hearn and Mullins to actually perform even better once they're traded. They have both been in a stressful situation leading up to the deadline. I'd like to see O'Hearn traded to Houston, closer to home, see what happens there.
Yeah, and they're both going to gain games in the standings. I mean, they're not trading to bottom feeders. They're going to contenders who want their services and view them as pieces that can help whatever team it is get over the hump. And I think they will both flourish. Hey, look how well they're playing now. Just thinking about getting traded, it's got them playing their best baseball in weeks.
And how about one more? This texter says, I find it interesting that Elias is trading in the division so much, even last year with the Eflin deal. Maybe I'm old school, but is that kind of stuff not taboo anymore?
I don't think it is. We were talking about it, Nolan, yesterday with one of our loyal listeners down at Pickles right before BBT. That used to be frowned upon. Now it's like, hey, just trade them to the best team, the best deal, and, you know, move on. I mean, a lot of these players are pending free agents, and doesn't matter anyway. They're only going to be there for half a season. But you would never trade within the division. And ironically enough, one of the best trades the Orioles ever made back in 1976, they traded a bunch of players to the Yankees, got Rick Dempsey, Tippi Martinez, Scott McGregor, among others, and helped build the foundation for an Orioles team that went to the World Series a couple of times.
I think it's a little easier to sell if you're the team that's selling in the division. Like last year with the Eflin deal, I mean, you could. The Orioles were desperate for pitching, though, so nobody was really knocking the trade. But the fact that, you know, you're handing away two prospects to the Rays, a team that has an insane track record of turning those prospects into something good. I mean, I think we all knew at the time that it's a pretty good chance at least one of those pieces that the Rays picked up last year going to do some damage against the O's down the road.
All right, D. Kramer's in a jam. Top of the fifth, second and third, one out. Orioles clinging to a 3-2 lead. Inside Access coming up next. Keep you up to date on that score throughout the duration of this game. We're back tomorrow for Total Request Thursday at 10 o'clock. For Nolan McGraw and Bob Haney, stay safe, stay healthy. We'll talk to you in the morning. For now, class dismissed.